Chapter 32 Rivers of Shadow. Nynaeve stood on the broad wall around Bandar Ebon, looking down over the darkened city. The wall was on the inland side of the city, but Bandar Ebon was built on a slope, so she could see out over it past the city toward the ocean beyond. The night fog rolled in across the waters, hanging above a crisp, black mirror sea. It seemed like a reflection of the clouds high above. Those clouds glowed with a phantom pearl light, cast by a moon she could not see. The fog did not reach the city. It rarely did. It hung over the ocean, churning, like the ghost of a forest fire stopped by some unseen barrier. She could still feel the storm to the north. It called on her to ride through the streets, shouting warning, "Flee to the cellars! Store up food, for a disaster will strike!" Unfortunately, packing earth or reinforcing walls would not help against this tempest. It was of a different sort entirely. The ocean fog was often herald to winds, and this night was no exception. She pulled her shawl close, smelling brine on the air. It mixed with the inevitable scents of an overcrowded city. Refuse, packed bodies, soot and smoke from fires and stoves. She missed the two rivers. The winds there were cold in the winters, but they were always fresh. Bandar Ebon's winds always felt slightly used. There would never again be a place for her in the two rivers. She knew this, though it hurt her. She was Aes Sedai now. It had become who she was, more important to her now than being wisdom had once been. With the one power, she could heal people in a way that still seemed a marvel. And with the authority of the White Tower behind her, she was one of the most powerful individuals in the world, matched only by other sisters and the occasional monarch. And in regard to monarchs, she herself was married to a king. He might not have a kingdom, but Lan was a king, to her, if nobody else. Life in the Two Rivers would not suit him. And truthfully, it wouldn't suit her either. That simple life, once all she had been able to imagine, would now seem dull and unfulfilling. Still, it was difficult not to feel wistful, particularly when watching the night fogs. "There," Maurice said, voice edged with tension. She, along with Cadswain and Coriel, stood looking in the other direction, not southwest over the city and ocean, but east. Nynaeve had almost decided against accompanying the group, as she had little doubt that Cadswain partly blamed Nynaeve for her exile. However, the prospect of seeing the apparitions had been too enticing. Nynaeve turned from the city and crossed the top of the wall, joining the others. Coriel glanced at her, but Maurice and Cadswain ignored her. That suited Nynaeve, though it did continue to irk her that Coriel, of the Yellow Aja, was so guarded in her acceptance of Nynaeve. Coriel was pleasant, consoling, yet sternly unwilling to admit that Nynaeve was also a member of the Yellow. While the woman would have to change ruts eventually, once Egwene secured the White Tower. Nynaeve peered through the crenellations atop the wall, scanning the dark landscape outside the city. She could faintly make out the remnants of the shanties that had crowded up against the walls until recently. The dangers, some real, others exaggerated, in the countryside, had caused most of the refugees to crowd into the city's streets. Dealing with them, and the disease and hunger they brought with them, still demanded a lot of Rand's time. Out beyond that trampled-down shantytown there were only shrubs, stunted trees, a shadowed bit of broken timber that might have been a wagon wheel. The nearby fields were barren, plowed, seeded, yet still barren. Light. Why didn't crops grow anymore? Where would they find food this winter? Anyway, that wasn't what she was looking for at the moment. What was it Maurice had seen? Where? Then Nynaeve saw it. Like a wisp of the ocean fog, a tiny patch of glowing light was blowing across the ground. It grew, bulging like a tiny storm cloud, glowing with a pearly light not unlike that of the clouds above. It resolved into the shape of a man, walking. Then that luminescent fog sprouted more figures. Within moments, an entire glowing procession strode across the dark ground, moving at a mournful pace. Nynaeve shivered, then sternly reprimanded herself. Spirits from the dead they might be, but they were no danger so far away. But try as she might, she could not banish the goosebumps from her arms. The procession was too distant for her to make out many details. There were both men and women in the line, clad in glowing clothing that flowed and shimmered like the city's banners. There was no color to the apparitions, just paleness, unlike most of the ghosts that had been appearing lately. These were composed completely of a strange, otherworldly light. Several figures in the group, which was now about 200 strong, were carrying a large object. Some kind of palanquin? Or, no, it was a coffin. Was this a funeral procession from long ago, then? What had happened to these people, and why had they been drawn back to the world of the living? Rumors in the city said the procession had first appeared the night after Rand arrived in Bandar Eben. The wall's guards, who were likely the most reliable, had confirmed that to her in uneasy voices. "I do not see the reason for so much fuss," Maurice said with her Tarabonner accent, folding her arms. "Ghosts, we are all accustomed to them by now, are we not? At least these aren't causing people to melt or burst into flames." Reports in the city indicated that incidents were growing more and more frequent. Just in the last few days, Nynaeve had investigated 3 credible reports of people who had had insects burrow out of their skin, killing them. There had also been the man who had been found in his bed one morning, completely changed into burned charcoal. His linens hadn't been singed. She had seen that body herself. These incidents weren't caused by the ghosts, but the people had begun to blame the apparitions. Better than blaming Rand, she supposed. "This waiting in the city, it is frustrating," Maurice continued. "Our time in this city does seem to lack fruit," Kareel agreed. "We should be moving on. You've heard that he is proclaiming that the last battle will begin soon." Nynaeve felt a stab of worry for Lan, then anger toward Rand. He still thought that if he could stage his assault at the same time as Lan's attack on Tarwin's Gap, he could confuse his enemies. Lan's attack could very well be the beginning of the last battle. Why, then, wouldn't Rand commit troops to help? "Yes," Cadswain said musingly. "He is probably right." Why did she keep that hood up? Rand obviously wasn't around. "Then we have all the greater reason to move on," Maurice said sternly. "Rand Althor, he is a fool, and Arad Doman, it is irrelevant. A king or no king, what does it matter?" "The Seán Cheann are not irrelevant," Nynaeve said, sniffing. "What of them? You would have us march to the Blight and leave our kingdoms open to invasion?" Maurice didn't react. Kareel smiled and shrugged, then looked toward Dahmer Flynn, who leaned against the wall behind them, his arms folded. The leathery old man's casual posture suggested that he saw the procession of ghosts as nothing special, and these days he might be right. Nynaeve looked back out at the ghost procession, who were walking in an arc, rounding the city wall. The other Aes Sedai resumed their conversation, Maurice and Kareel taking further opportunity to voice their displeasure with Rand in their separate ways, one dour, the other congenial. It made Nynaeve want to defend him. Though he had been difficult and erratic lately, there was important work for him to do in Arad Doman. The meeting with the Seán Cheann in Falma was only a short time away. Beyond that, Rand was right to worry about filling the Domani throne. And what if Grendel really was here, as he seemed to think? The others thought he must be mistaken about the Forsaken, but Rand had discovered Forsaken in nearly every other kingdom. Why not Arad Doman? A missing king? A land seething with confusion, famine, and strife? These things sounded exactly like the kinds of trouble one would discover near one of the Forsaken. The others continued to talk. Nynaeve started to leave, and as she did so, she noticed that Cadswain was watching her. Nynaeve hesitated, turning toward the cloaked woman. Cadswain's face was barely visible by torchlight, but Nynaeve caught a grimace in the shadows as if Cadswain were displeased with Maurice's and Coriel's complaints. Nynaeve and Cadswain stared at each other for a moment, then Cadswain nodded curtly. The aged Aes Sedai turned and began to walk away, right in the middle of one of Maurice's tirades about Rand. The other Aes Sedai bustled to catch up. What had that look been for? Cadswain had a habit of treating other Aes Sedai as if they were less worthy of respect than a common mule. It was as if all the rest of them were mere children in her eyes. But, well, considering the way many Aes Sedai had been acting lately... Frowning to herself, Nynaeve left in the other direction, nodding to the wall guards. That nod of Cadswain's couldn't possibly have been given out of respect. Cadswain was far too self-righteous and arrogant for that. What to do about Rand, then? He didn't want Nynaeve's help, or anyone's help, but that was nothing new. He'd been just as stubborn as a sheep herder back in the Two Rivers, and his father had been nearly as bad. That had never stopped Nynaeve the Wisdom, so it certainly wouldn't stop Nynaeve the Aes Sedai. She'd wrangled Coplins and Khongars. She could do the same for trumped-up Rand Al'Thor. She had half a mind to stride to his new palace and give him an earful. Except, Rand Al'Thor wasn't just any Coplin or Khongar. Stubborn folks back in the Two Rivers hadn't had Rand's strangely menacing aura. She'd dealt with dangerous men before. Her own land was as dangerous as a wolf on the prowl, and could be as prickly, too, even if he was good at hiding it from most people. But as threatening and as intimidating as land could be, he'd sooner chop off his own hand than raise it to harm her. Rand was different. Nynaeve reached the steps leading off the wall into the city and headed down them, waving away a guard's suggestion that she take one of them in escort. It was night, and there were a lot of refugees about, but she was hardly helpless. She did accept a lantern from another guard, however. Using the one power to craft light would make the passers-by uncomfortable. Rand. Once she'd thought him as gentle as Lan. His devotion to protecting women had been almost laughable in its innocence. That Rand was gone. Nynaeve saw again the moment when he had exiled Cadswain. She'd believed that he would kill Cadswain if he saw her face again, and thinking of the moment still gave her shivers. Surely it had been her imagination, but the room had seemed to darken distinctly at that moment, as if a cloud had passed over the sun. Rand Al'Thor had grown unpredictable. His explosion of temper at Nynaeve herself a few days ago was just another example. Of course, he would never exile or threaten her, despite what he had said. He wasn't that hard, was he? She reached the bottom of the stone steps, walking out onto a boardwalk stained with the mud of evening traffic. She pulled her shawl close. Huddled people clustered on the other side of the street. The shop entrances and alleyways there offered protection from the wind. She heard a child cough among a distant group. She froze, then heard the cough again. It was not an easy sound. Muttering, she crossed the street, then forced her way through the refugees, holding up her lantern to illuminate one group of drowsy people after another. Many had the coppery skin of the Damani, but there were a fair number of Tarabonners as well. And were those Saldaeans? That was unexpected. Most of the refugees lay in ragged blankets next to their meager possessions, a pot here, a quilt there. One young girl had a small cloth doll that might have once been fine, but had now lost one of its arms. Rand certainly was effective at subduing countries, but his kingdoms needed more than just handouts of grain. They needed stability, and they needed something, someone, they could believe in. Rand was getting increasingly bad at offering either one. Where was the source of that cough? Few of the refugees spoke to her, and they were hesitant to answer her questions. When she finally found the boy, she was more than a little annoyed. His parents had made their beds in a hollow between two wooden shops, and as Nynaeve approached, the father stood up to confront her. He was a scruffy Damani with a dark, ragged beard and a thick mustache that might have once been trimmed to Damani fashion. He wore no coat, and his shirt was nearly in tatters. Nynaeve stared him down with a look she had learned long before her days as an Aes Sedai. Honestly, men could be so foolish. His son was likely dying, and yet he confronted one of the few people in the city who could help. The wife had more sense, which was usually the case. She laid a hand on her husband's leg, causing him to glance down. He finally turned away with a quiet mutter. The wife's features were difficult to see through the grime on her face. The dirt was streaked with tear lines on her cheeks. She had obviously had a difficult couple of nights. Nynaeve knelt, ignoring the looming father, then pulled back the blanket from the face of the child in the woman's arms. Sure enough, he was gaunt and pale, and his eyes fluttered open in some delusion. "How long has he been coughing?" Nynaeve said, pulling a few packets of herbs out of the pouch at her side. She didn't have much, but they would have to do. "A week now, lady," the woman replied. Nynaeve tisked in annoyance, pointing toward a nearby tin cup. "Fill that," she snapped at the father. "You are lucky the boy has survived this long with the white shakes. He likely wouldn't live the night without intervention." Despite his earlier reluctance, the father hastened to obey, filling the cup from a nearby barrel. At least there wasn't a lack of water here, with the frequent rains. Nynaeve took the cup and mixed the asem and feverbane in it, then wove a thread of fire and heated the water. It started steaming faintly, and the father muttered some more. Nynaeve shook her head. She'd always heard that the Damani were pragmatic people when it came to use of the One Power. The unrest in the city must really be getting to them. "Drink," she said to the boy, kneeling down and using all five powers in a complex wave of healing that she used instinctively. Her ability had awed some of the other Aes Sedai, but had earned her scorn from others. Either way, her method worked, even if she couldn't explain how she did what she did. That was one of the blessings and the curses of being a wilder. She could do things by instinct that other Aes Sedai struggled to learn. However, it was difficult for Nynaeve to unlearn some of the bad habits she'd learned. The boy, though dazed, responded to the cup pressed to his lips. Her healing weave lay across him as he drank, and he stiffened, inhaling sharply. The herbs weren't needed, but they would help give him strength following the rigorous healing. She'd gotten over her habit of always using herbs when healing, but she still felt they had their place and usefulness. The father knelt down threateningly, but Nynaeve pressed the tips of her fingers to his chest and forced him back. "Give the child air." The boy blinked, and Nynaeve could see sense flood back into his eyes. He shivered weakly. Nynaeve delved him to determine how well the healing had worked. "The fever has broken," she said with a nod, standing and releasing the one power. "He will need to eat well over the next few days. I will give your descriptions to the dock masters, and you will receive extra rations. Do not sell the food, or I will find out and I will be angry. Do you understand?" The woman looked down, ashamed. "We would never—" "I don't take anything for granted anymore," Nynaeve said. "Anyway, he should live if you do as I say. Feed him the rest of that draft tonight by sips, if you have to. If the fever starts again, bring him to me at the Dragon's Palace." "Yes, my lady," the woman said as the husband knelt, taking the boy and smiling. Nynaeve picked up her lantern and rose. "Lady," the woman said, "thank you." Nynaeve turned back. "You should have brought him to me days ago. I don't care what foolish superstitions people are spreading. The Aes Sedai are not your enemies. If you know any who are sick, encourage them to visit us." The woman nodded, and the husband seemed cowed. Nynaeve stalked out of the alleyway and back onto the dark street, passing folk who watched her with a mixture of awe and horror. Foolish people. Would they let their own children die rather than get them healed? Back on the street, Nynaeve calmed herself. The diversion really hadn't taken much of her time, and, tonight at least, time was one of the things she had plenty of. She wasn't having much luck dealing with Rand. Her only consolation was that Cadswain had done worse as his advisor. How did one handle a creature like the dragon reborn? Nynaeve knew that the old Rand was there, within him somewhere. He had simply been beaten and kicked so many times that he'd gone into hiding, letting this harsher version rule. As much as it galled her to admit it, bullying him was just not going to work. But how was she to get him to do what he should, since he was too bullheaded to respond to ordinary prodding? Nynaeve halted, lantern light illuminating an empty street before her. There was one person who had managed to work with Rand, while at the same time teaching and training him. It hadn't been Cad Swain, nor had it been any of the Aes Sedai who tried to capture him, trick him, or bully him. It had been Moiraine. Nynaeve continued on her way. During the last months of her life, the Blue had all but fawned over Rand. In order to get him to take her as his advisor, she'd agreed to obey his commands and offer advice only when it was wanted. What good was advice when it was given only when it was wanted? People needed most to hear the advice they didn't want. But Moiraine had been successful. Through her, Rand had begun to overcome his aversion to Aes Sedai. Without Rand's eventual acceptance of Moiraine, it was doubtful that Cad Swain would ever have made headway in becoming his counselor. Well, Nynaeve wasn't about to act the same way for Randall Thor, no matter how many fancy titles he had. However, she did have something to learn from Moiraine's success. Perhaps Rand had listened to Moiraine because her subservience had flattered him. Or maybe he had simply been tired of people pushing him around. Rand did have many people trying to control him. They must frustrate him, and they made Nynaeve's own job a lot more difficult, since she was the one that he actually needed to listen to. Did he perhaps see her simply as another of those irrelevant manipulators? She wouldn't put it past him. She needed to show him that they were working for the same goals. She didn't want to tell him what to do. She just wanted him to stop acting like a fool. And beyond that, she just wanted him to be safe. She'd also like him to be a leader that people respected, not one that people feared. He seemed incapable of seeing that the path he was on was that of a tyrant. Being a king really wasn't all that different from being mayor in the Two Rivers. The mayor needed to be respected and liked. The wisdom and the women's circle could do the difficult tasks, such as punishing those who overstepped their bounds. The mayor, however, needed to be loved. That led to a civil and a safe town. But how to show that to Rand? She couldn't force him. She needed to get him to listen to her in another way. A plan began to take root in her head. By the time she reached the mansion, she had an idea of what to do. The gate to the mansion grounds was guarded by Saldaeans. The Aiel preferred to stay closer to Rand, watching the rooms and the hallways of the mansion itself. Haster Nalmat, the officer on duty, gave Nynaeve a bow as she approached. Some people still knew how to treat Aes Sedai. The grounds beyond the gate were ornamental and cultivated. Nynaeve's lantern cast strange shadows on the grass as its light shone through the trees trained and trimmed in the shapes of fanciful animals. The shadows moved in concert with her lantern, the phantom shapes lengthening and merging with the greater blackness of the night around her, like rivers of shadow. A larger group of Saldaean soldiers stood guard at the front of the mansion, far more than were necessary. Whenever men stood on guard, their friends tended to gather, no doubt to gossip. Nynaeve strode up to the group, causing several of them to stop leaning lazily against the mansion's gallery of pillars. "Who of you are not on duty right now?" she asked. Sure enough, three of the nine soldiers raised their hands, looking somewhat sheepish. "Excellent," Nynaeve said, handing her lantern to one of them. "You three come with me." She strode into the mansion, the three soldiers scrambling in behind. It was late. The ghost procession appeared only at midnight, and the mansion slumbered. The intricate chandelier in the entryway had been extinguished, and the hallways were dark. Testing her memory, she picked a direction and walked down it. The whitewashed walls were as immaculate here as they were in other sections of the mansion, but they were unornamented. Her instincts proved correct as she soon entered a small pantry where servants would prepare platters of food before taking them to the dining room. The hallway she had chosen led out to the mansion sitting rooms. Another hallway at the back led to the kitchens. The room was furnished with a big, sturdy wooden table and some tall stools. Those were occupied by a group of men playing a game of dice, wearing green and white linen shirts, the livery of Milisaire's house, with thick work trousers. They looked up with shock as Nynaeve strode into the room. One of the men actually leaped to his feet, his stool toppling to the floor behind him. He pulled off his hat, a lopsided brown thing that even Matt would have been embarrassed to wear, looking like a child caught poking his finger into the pie before dinner. Nynaeve didn't care what they were doing. She had found some servants of the mansion, and that was all that mattered. "I must see the Dosen," she said, using the local term for the head housekeeper. "Fetch her for me." Her soldiers entered the room behind her. All three were Saldaeans, and if they were somewhat oafish, they walked with the swaggers of men who intimately understood fighting. She doubted that these simple servants needed any more intimidation than an Aes Sedai, but the soldiers would likely prove useful later.
"The Dosen?" the worker with the hat finally said. "Are you sure you wouldn't rather see the steward or
the Dosen?" Nynaeve said. "Bring her to me now. Give her time to throw on a robe, but no more." She pointed at one of her soldiers. "You go with him. Make sure he doesn't speak to anyone else or give the woman a chance to escape."
"Escape?" the worker yelped. "Why would Laral want to do that? What did she do, my lady?"
"Nothing, I hope. Go." The two men, one worker, one soldier, hurried off, and the other three workers remained at the table looking uncomfortable. Nynaeve folded her arms beneath her breasts, considering her plan. Rand had determined that his hunt for the Damani king had hit a wall with the death of the messenger. Nynaeve wasn't so certain. There were others involved, and a few well-placed questions might be very illuminating. It was unlikely the Dosen had done anything wrong, but Nynaeve did not want the worker who fetched her letting his tongue wag to the people he might meet along the way. Better to instill into him a sense of danger and use the soldier to keep him quiet, not to mention punctual. Her foresight proved effective. Within minutes, the worker hurried back into the room, towing a disheveled elderly woman in a blue evening robe. Gray hair poked out from beneath her hastily wrapped red kerchief, and her aging Damani face was absolutely white with apprehension. Nynaeve felt guilty. How this woman must feel, awoken at night by a terrified servant claiming that one of the Aes Sedai wanted her immediately. The Saldaean soldier followed, then stood guard beside the doorway. He was bow-legged and squat, and he wore one of those long Saldaean mustaches. The other two lounged beside the doorway Nynaeve had come through, their casual air only serving to make the room more tense. They had picked up on something of her intent, it seemed. "Peace, good woman," Nynaeve said, nodding to the table. "You may sit. You others go to the main entryway and stay there. Don't speak to anyone." The four workers needed no further prodding. Nynaeve told one of the soldiers to follow them and make certain they did as she said. The late hour was working to her advantage. With so many of the servants and Rand's attendants asleep, she could investigate without alerting those who might be guilty. The departure of the workers only made the Dosen more nervous. Nynaeve sat at the table on one of the vacated stools. The men had left their dice behind in their haste, but had, of course, made sure to take their coins. The room was lit by a small lamp, burning with an open flame on the windowsill. The Saldaean had taken her lantern with him when following the workers. "Your name is Laral, is it not?" Nynaeve asked. The Dosen nodded warily. "You are aware that Aes Sedai do not lie?" The housekeeper nodded again. Most Aes Sedai couldn't lie, though Nynaeve technically could, since she hadn't held the oath rod. That was part of what earned her a lesser status in the eyes of the others, undeservedly so. The oath rod was only a formality. Two rivers folk needed no Turangreal to make them honest.
Then you will believe me when I tell you that I do not suspect you personally of having done anything wrong. I just need your help. The woman seemed to relax a bit.
What help do you need, Nynaeve Sedai?
It has been my experience that the head housekeeper knows more of a house's workings than the stewards, or even the owners of the property. Have you been employed here for long?
I have served the Chadmar family through 3 generations, the old woman said, with no small measure of pride, and had hoped to serve another if her ladyship had...
The housekeeper cut off. Rand had imprisoned her ladyship in her own dungeons. That didn't bode well for there being another generation to serve. Yes, well, Nynaeve said, covering the uncomfortable silence. The unfortunate circumstances involving your lady are part of my task this evening.
Nynaeve Sedai, the aged woman said, growing eager. Do you suppose you can see her to freedom? Restore her to the Lord Dragon's good graces?
Perhaps. Doubtful, Nynaeve added in her mind, but anything is possible. My activities tonight may help. Did you ever see this messenger, the one your mistress imprisoned?
The one sent by the king?
Loral asked.
I never spoke with him, Aes Sedai, but I did see him. Tall, handsome fellow, curiously clean-shaven for a Dimani man. I passed him in the hallway. Had one of the most beautiful faces I rightly think I've ever seen on a man.
And then? Nynaeve asked.
Well, he went directly to speak with Lady Chadmar, and then...
Loral trailed off.
Nynaeve Sedai, I don't mean to be getting my lady into any more trouble, and
he was sent for questioning, Nynaeve said shortly. I have little time for foolishness, Loral. I am not here looking for evidence against your mistress, and I don't really care what your loyalties are. There are much larger issues at stake. Answer my question.
Yes, lady, Loral said, paling. We all knew what had happened, of course. Didn't seem right, sending one of the king's men to a questioner like that. Particularly that man, shamed to mar a face so beautiful and all.
You know the location of the questioner and the dungeon? Loral hesitated, then nodded reluctantly. Good. She didn't intend to withhold information.
Let us go, then, Nynaeve said, rising.
My lady?
To the dungeon, Nynaeve said. I assume it isn't on the property anywhere. Not if Millisaire Chadmar was as careful as I think.
It's a modest distance away in the Gulls' Feast, Loral said.
You wish to go tonight?
Yes, Nynaeve said, then hesitated. Unless I decide to visit the questioner at his home instead.
They are the same place, my lady.
Excellent. Come. Loral didn't have much choice. Nynaeve allowed her, guarded by a soldier, to return to her rooms for a dress. A short time later, Nynaeve and her soldiers marched the Dosen, along with the 4 workers, to keep them from accidentally giving warning of what was happening, from the building. All 5 looked decidedly displeased. They probably believed the superstitious rumors that the night was not safe. Nynaeve knew better. The night might not be safe, but it wasn't any worse than other times. In fact, it might be safer. If there were fewer people about, there were fewer chances of someone nearby suddenly growing thorns out of their skin, bursting into flame, or dying in some other horribly random way. They left the mansion grounds, Nynaeve walking with a firm step, hoping to keep the others from feeling too nervous. She nodded to the soldiers at the gate and went in the direction Loral indicated. Their feet thumped against the wood of the boardwalk, the clouded night sky glowing just faintly from moonlight above. Nynaeve didn't give herself the luxury of questioning her plan. She'd decided on a course, and so far it was going well. True, Rand might grow angry at her for appropriating soldiers and stirring up trouble. But sometimes, to see what was at the bottom of a cloudy rain barrel, you needed to stir the water to bring up what was at the bottom. It was just too coincidental. Millisaire Chadmar had taken the messenger captive months ago, but he had died only a short time before Rand wanted him. He was the only person in the city with a clue to the king's location. Coincidences did happen.
Sometimes, when two farmers were feuding and one of their cows died in the night, it was just an accident. And sometimes a little searching uncovered the opposite. Loral led the group toward the Gull's Feast, also known as the Gull District, a part of town close to where the fishermen dumped waste from their hauls. Like most sensible people, Nynaeve avoided that section of town, and her nose reminded her just why as they approached. Fish guts might make excellent fertilizer, but Nynaeve could smell the composting heaps from several streets away. Even the refugees avoided this dark area. The walk was a fairly long one. Understandably, the rich sector of town was distant from the Gull's Feast. Nynaeve stalked along, paying no heed to the shadowed alleyways and buildings, though her entourage, soldiers excepted, clustered around her apprehensively. The Saldaeans instead kept their hands on their serpentine swords, trying to look in all directions at once. She wished she had news from the White Tower. How long had it been since she'd had news from Egwene or one of the others? She felt blind. It was her own fault for insisting that she go with Rand. Someone had needed to keep an eye on him, but that meant being unable to keep any eyes on everyone else. Was the tower still divided? Was Egwene still Amyrlin? News on the streets was little help. As always, for every rumor she heard, there were two more contradicting it. The White Tower was fighting itself. No, it fought the Ashaman. No, the Aes Sedai had been destroyed by the Shan Shan, or by the Dragon Reborn. No, those rumors were all lies spread by the tower to bait its enemies into striking. Very little was said about Elida or Egwene specifically, though garbled news of two Amyrlins was spreading. That was problematic. Neither group of Aes Sedai would like spreading the news of a second Amyrlin. Tales of squabbles among the Aes Sedai would only end up hurting all of them. Eventually, Loral stopped walking. The four workers stopped behind her, bundling together with worried expressions. Nynaeve glanced at Loral. Well?
There, lady.
The woman pointed a bony finger to the building across the street. The Chandler's shop? Nynaeve asked. Loral nodded. Nynaeve summoned one of the bow-legged Saldaean soldiers.
You, watch these five and make sure they don't get into trouble. You other two, come with me.
She started across the street, but when she didn't hear footsteps leave the boardwalk, she turned with a frown. The three guards stood together looking at the single lantern, likely cursing themselves for not thinking to bring another.
Oh, for the light's sake, Nynaeve snapped, raising her hand and embracing the source.
She wove a globe of light above her fingers, casting a cool, even illumination across the ground around her.
Leave the lantern.
The two Saldaeans complied, hurrying after her. She stepped up to the Chandler's door, then wove a ward against eavesdropping and placed it in the air around herself, the door, and the two soldiers. She looked at one of the soldiers.
What's your name?
Triban, my lady, he said.
He was a hawk-faced man with a short, trimmed mustache and a scar across his forehead.
That's Lertz, he said, pointing at the other soldier,
a massive wall of a man, who Nynaeve had been surprised to see was uniformed as a cavalryman.
All right, Triban, Nynaeve said. Kick the door open.
Triban didn't question her. He just raised a booted foot and kicked. The frame cracked easily and the door slammed open, but if her ward had been placed correctly, nobody in the building would be able to hear. She peeked in. The room smelled of wax and perfumes, and the wooden floor was marked by numerous spots. Drip marks. Wax that had been cleaned up often left a mark. Quickly, she said to the soldiers, releasing the ward but maintaining the globe of light.
Lertz, go to the back of the shop and watch the alley. Make certain nobody escapes. Triban, with me.
Lertz moved with surprising speed for his bulk, taking his position in the back room of the shop. Her globe illuminated barrels for dipping candles and a pile of burned nubs in the corner, bought for pennies to be remelted. A staircase mounted to the right. A small alcove in the front of the shop was the storefront, and it contained various sizes and shapes of candles, from the standard white rod to the perfumed and decorated brick. If Loral was wrong about this being the place. But any good secret operation would have a working front. Nynaeve hurried up the stairs, wood creaking beneath her weight. The building was narrow. On the upper floor, she and Triban found two rooms. One door was open a crack, so Nynaeve dimmed her globe of light and wove a ward against listeners into the room. Then she burst in, hawk-faced Triban following, his sword scraping against its scabbard as he pulled it free. There was only one person in the room, an overweight man sleeping on a mattress on the floor, blankets in a heap around his feet. Nynaeve wove a few threads of air, tying him up in one smooth motion. His eyes bulged open and he opened his mouth to scream, but Nynaeve stuffed air between his lips, gagging him. She turned to Triban and nodded, tying off her weaves. They left the bound man there, struggling against his bonds, and crossed to the other door. She wove another weave against eavesdropping into the room before entering, and it was a good thing she did, for the two younger men in this room roused much more quickly. One sat bolt upright, letting out a yelp, just as Triban headed across the floorboards. Triban punched him in the stomach, knocking the air out of his lungs. Nynaeve bound him with a thread of air, then did the same for the other young man, who was rousing drowsily in his bunk. She towed the two toward her, brightening her globe of light, hanging the men up in the air a few inches. They were both Damani, with dark hair and crude faces, thin mustaches above their lips. Both wore only their small clothes. They seemed too old to be apprentices.
"I think we have the right place, Nynaeve Sedai," Triban said, walking around the pair to stand beside her.
She raised an eyebrow at him.
"Those are no Chandler's apprentices," Triban continued.
He slid his sword back into its sheath.
"Calluses on the palms, but no burns on their hands. Muscled arms, and they're far too old. That fellow on the left has had his nose broken at least once."
She looked closer. Triban was right. I should have seen that. Still, she had noticed the age. "Which one do you think I should ungag?" she asked casually. "And which one should I kill?" Both men began to squirm, eyes wide. They should have known that an Aes Sedai would never do anything of the sort. In fact, she probably shouldn't have implied it, but private jailers like these riled her anger.
"The one on the left seems most eager to talk, lady," Triban said. "Perhaps he will tell you what you wish to know."
She nodded, releasing the man's gag. He began to speak immediately.
"I will do whatever you say. Please don't fill my stomach with insects. I haven't done anything wrong, I promise you.
She stuffed the air gag back in. "Too much complaining," she said. "Perhaps the other will know to hush and speak when spoken to." She released his gag. This man remained dangling in the air, obviously terrified, but saying nothing. The one power could unnerve the most hardened of killers. "How do I get into the dungeon?" she asked this man. He looked sick, but he had probably already guessed that she'd want the dungeon. It was unlikely that an Aes Sedai would burst into the shop after midnight because she'd been sold a bad candle.
"Trapdoor," the man said. "Under the rug in the shop front."
"Excellent," Nynaeve said. She tied off the weaves binding the men's hands, then replaced the gag on the one who had spoken. She didn't leave them hanging in the air. She didn't want to have to pull them along behind her, and instead let them walk on their own feet. She had Triban fetch the overweight man from the other room, then herded all three down the stairs. Below, they met the muscular Lurts keeping careful watch on the alley out back. A youth sat on the floor in front of him, and Nynaeve's globe of light illuminated his face, a frightened Damani one, with uncharacteristically light hair and hands spotted with burns.
"Now that's a Chandler's apprentice," Triban said, scratching his forehead scar. "They probably have him doing all of the work for the front."
"He was asleep under those blankets over there."
Lurts nodded to a shadowed pile in the corner as he joined Nynaeve.
"Tried to scramble out the front door after you went up the stairs."
"Bring him," Nynaeve said. In the small storefront, Triban pulled back the rug, then used the edge of his sword to prod through the slats until he knocked against something underneath. Hinges, Nynaeve assumed. After a little careful prying, he got the trapdoor open. A ladder reached down into the darkness below. Nynaeve stepped forward, but Triban held up a hand.
"Lord Bashir would hang me up by my own stirrups if I let you go first, lady," he said. "No telling what might be down there."
He leaped into the hole, sliding down the ladder with one hand, his sword in the other. He thumped to the ground below, and Nynaeve rolled her eyes.
"Men."
She gestured for Lurtz to watch the jailers, then released their bonds so they could climb down. She gave each of them a stern look, then she proceeded down the ladder without Triban's ridiculous flare, leaving Lurtz to herd the jailers after. She raised her globe of light and surveyed the cellar. The walls were stone, which made her feel much less nervous about the weight of the building above. The floor was packed dirt, and there was a wooden doorway built into the wall across from her. Triban was listening at it. She nodded and he pulled it open, darting inside eagerly. The Saldaeans seemed to be picking up some bad habits from the Aiel. Nynaeve followed, preparing weaves of air just in case. Behind her, the sullen jailers began to climb down the ladder, followed by Lurtz. There wasn't much to see in the other room. Two dungeon cells with thick wooden doors, a table with some stools beside it, and a large wooden trunk. Nynaeve sent her globe of light to the corner as hawk-faced Triban inspected the trunk. He lifted the lid, then raised an eyebrow, pulling out several glittering knives. Aids for questioning. Nynaeve shivered. She turned harsh eyes on the jailers behind her. She untied the gag on the one who had spoken. "Keys?" she asked.
"Bottom of the trunk," said the thug.
The overweight jailer, the leader of the group, no doubt, as he didn't share a room, shot him a furious glance. Nynaeve jerked the leader into the air.
"Don't provoke me," she growled. "It's already far too late at night for reasonable people to be awake."
She nodded to Triban, and he dug out the keys and opened the cell doors. The first cell was empty. The second one held a disheveled woman, still wearing a fine Damani dress, though it was soiled. Lady Chadmar was dirty and ragged, and she curled against the wall, drowsy, barely even noticing that the door was open. Nynaeve caught a whiff of a stench that, up until that moment, had been covered by the scent of rotting fish. Human excrement, and an unwashed body. Likely that was one reason for locating the dungeon here in the Gull's Feast. Nynaeve inhaled sharply at seeing how the woman was being treated. How could Rand allow this? The woman herself had done this very thing to others, but that didn't make it right for him to stoop to her level. She waved for Triban to close the door, then she sat down on one of the room's stools, regarding the three jailers. Behind, Lurtz guarded the way out, keeping an eye on the poor apprentice. The overweight jailer still hung in the air. She needed information. She could have asked Rand for permission to visit the jail in the morning, but in doing so she would have risked alerting these men that they were going to be visited. She was depending on surprise and intimidation to reveal what had been hidden. "Now," she said to the three, "I am going to ask some questions. You are going to answer. I'm not certain what I'm going to do with you yet, so realize it's best to be very honest with me." The two on the ground looked up at the other man floating in the invisible weaves of air. They nodded. "The man who was brought to you," she said. "The messenger of the king. When did he first arrive?"
2 months ago,"
one of the toughs said, the one with the large chin and the broken nose.
"Arrived in a sack with the candle nubs from Lady Chadmar's mansion, just like all the prisoners."
"Your instructions?"
"Hold him," the other tough said. "Keep him alive. We didn't know much, Lady Aes Sedai. Jorgen is the one who does all the questioning."
She looked up at the fat man. "You're Jorgen?" He nodded reluctantly. "And what were your instructions?" Jorgen didn't respond. Nynaeve sighed. "Look," she said to him, "I am Aes Sedai, and am bound by my word.
If you tell me what I want to know, I will see that you are not suspected in the death. The dragon doesn't care about you three. Otherwise you wouldn't still be here in charge of this little stopover of yours.
If we talk, we go free,
the fat man said, eyeing her.
Your word?
Nynaeve glanced about the tiny room with a dissatisfied eye. They had left Lady Chadmar in the dark, and the door was packed with cloth to muffle screams. The cell would be dark, stuffy, and cramped. Men who would work a place like this barely deserved life, let alone freedom. But there was a much larger sickness to deal with.
Yes, Nynaeve said, the word bitter in her mouth. And you know that's better than you deserve.
Jorgen hesitated, then nodded.
Let me down, Aes Sedai, and I'll answer your questions.
She did so. The man might not know it, but she had very little authority to stand on. She wouldn't resort to his methods of extracting answers, and she was acting without Rand's knowledge. The dragon probably wouldn't react well when he discovered that she'd been prying, not unless she could present him with discoveries. Jorgen said to the broken-nosed thug,
Mord, fetch me a stool.
Mord glanced at Nynaeve for approval, which she gave with a curt nod. As Jorgen settled his bulk onto the stool, he leaned forward, hands clasped before him. He resembled a hulking beetle tipped up on its side.
I don't see what you need from me, the man said. You seem to know everything already. You know about my facility and about the people it has held. What more is there to know?
Facility? Some word for it. That is my own business, Nynaeve said, giving him a stare, which she hoped implied that the concerns of the Aes Sedai were not to be questioned. Tell me, how did the messenger die?
Without dignity, Jorgen replied. Like all men in my experience.
Give me specifics, or you'll go back to hanging in the air.
I opened the cell door a few days back to feed him. He was dead.
How long it had been since you'd fed him, then? Jorgen snorted.
I don't starve my guests, Lady Aes Sedai. I just encourage them to be free with what they know.
And how much encouragement did you give the messenger?
Not enough to kill him,
the jailer said defensively. Oh, come now, Nynaeve said. The man remained for months in your possession, presumably healthy all that time. Then the day before he is to be brought before the dragon reborn, he suddenly dies? You already have my promise of amnesty. Tell me who bribed you to kill him, and I'll see that you're protected. The jailer shook his head.
It wasn't like that. I'm telling you, he just died. It happens sometimes.
I tire of your games.
It's not a game, burn you,
Jorgen snarled.
You think a man could get far in my profession if it were known that he'd accept a bribe to kill one of his guests? You couldn't trust him any further than you could a lying Aiel.
She let that last comment slide, though a man like this one could never be trusted.
Look, Jorgen said, that wasn't the type of prisoner you kill anyway. Everybody wants to know where the king is. Who'd kill the only one with information about it? That man was worth good money.
So he's not dead, Nynaeve surmised. Who did you sell him to?
Oh, he's dead, the jailer said with a chuckle. If I had sold him, I wouldn't have lived long afterward. You learn that sort of thing quickly, doing what I do.
She turned to the other two thugs. Is he lying? She asked of them. 100 gold marks to the one of you who can give me proof that he is. Mord glanced at his boss, then grimaced.
For 100 in gold, I'd sell you my own mother, lady. Burn me, but I would. Jorgen's telling the truth, though. That body was good and dead. The dragon's men checked when they brought the lady to us.
So Rand had considered that possibility. But she still had no proof that these men were telling her the truth. If there was something to hide, they'd work hard to bury it deep. She decided to try a different path. What did you discover then, she said, about the king's location? Jorgen just sighed.
Like I told the Lord Dragon's men, and like I told Lady Chadmar before she landed here in the dungeons herself,
That man knew something, but he wouldn't speak it.
Come now, Nynaeve said, shooting a glance at the chest with its sharp equipment. She had to look away again before it angered her. A man of your skill? Then you couldn't pry one simple fact out of him?
Dark One, take me if I'm lying.
The jailer's face flushed, as if this were a matter of pride for him.
I've never seen a man resist like that one did. A pretty feather of a man like him should have broken without much encouragement at all. But he didn't. He would speak on anything other than the things we wanted.
Jorgen leaned forward.
I don't know how he did it, lady. Burn me, but I don't. It's like some force had a hold of his tongue. It was like he couldn't talk, even if he'd wanted to.
The two thugs muttered to themselves, looking apprehensive. It seemed that Nynaeve's questioning had hit a nerve. So you pushed him too hard, Nynaeve guessed. And that's how he died.
Take it all, woman, the jailer growled. Blood and bloody ashes. I didn't kill him. Sometimes people just die.
Unfortunately, she was coming to believe him. Jorgen was a wretch of a man who could use a decade doing chores beneath the eyes of a wisdom. But he wasn't lying. So much for her grand plans. She sighed, standing up, realizing just how tired she really was. Light. This scheme was more likely to make Rand explode at her than persuade him to listen to her counsel. She needed to return to the mansion for some sleep. Perhaps tomorrow she'd be able to think up a better way to show Rand that she was on his side. She waved for the guards to take the jailer and his men back up above. After that, she wove air to shut the cell door on Millisaire Chadmar. Nynaeve would see that the woman's conditions were improved. Despicable human being or not, she should not be treated this way. Rand would have to understand that when she explained it to him. Why, Millisaire looked so pale she might be coming down with the shakes. Absently, Nynaeve walked to the viewing slit at the top of the cell door, then wove a delving of spirit to make certain the woman was not ill. As soon as she began the delving, Nynaeve froze. She had expected to find Millisaire's body taxed by exhaustion. She had expected to find disease, perhaps hunger. She had not expected to find poison. Cursing, suddenly alert, Nynaeve threw open the cell door and rushed inside. Yes, she could see it easily through the delving. Torch rot leaf. Nynaeve herself had given that to a hound who had needed to be put down. It was a common enough plant and had a very bitter flavor. Not the best poison, as it had such an unpleasant taste and yet had to be ingested. Yes, it was a bad poison, unless the person you were poisoning was already captive and had no choice but to eat the food you gave her. Nynaeve began a healing, weaving all five powers, strangling the poison and strengthening Millisaire's body. It was a relatively easy healing, as Tarch Rot Leaf wasn't particularly strong. You either had to use a lot of it, as she had with the hound, or you had to administer it several times for it to take effect. But if you did it slowly like that, the person you killed with it would seem to die naturally. Once Millisaire was safe, Nynaeve burst from the cell.
Stop! She bellowed at the men. Jorgen!
Lertz at the back turned with surprise. He grabbed the jailer Jorgen by the arm and spun him around. Who prepares the prisoner's food? Nynaeve demanded, stalking toward him.
Food? Jorgen asked, looking confused. That's one of Curb's jobs. Why?
Curb?
The lad, Jorgen said. Nobody important. An apprentice we found among the refugees a few months back. Quite a lucky find. Our last apprentice ran off on us, and this one was already trained in...
Nynaeve hushed him with a raised hand, suddenly anxious. The boy? Where is he?
He was just here, Lertz said, glancing up. Went with...
There was a sudden scrambling from above. Nynaeve cursed, calling for Triban to catch the boy. She shoved her way to the ladder and began climbing. She darted out into the shop above, her glowing light following. The two thugs stood cowering in the center room, looking confused, and a Saldaean guard stood with a sword pulled on them. He looked at her questioningly.
The boy, she said. Triban glanced toward the shop door. It was open. Preparing weaves of air, Nynaeve dashed out onto the street. There she found the boy, Curb, in the muddy street, held down by the four dice-playing workers she'd brought from the mansion. Even as she stepped off the boardwalk onto the street, they pulled the struggling, frantic boy to his feet. The last Saldaean stood at the doorway, sword out, as if he'd been rushing in to see if she was in danger.
"He bolted out the door, Aes Sedai," one of the workers said, "as if the Dark One himself was chasing him. Your soldier ran over to see if you were in danger, but we figured it'd be best to snatch this lad before he could get away. Just in case."
Nynaeve let out a breath to calm herself. "You did well," she said. The youth struggled weakly. "You did well, indeed."